Hi there. Welcome to the From Lab to Launch podcast by Qualio, where we share inspiring stories from the people on the front lines of life sciences. Tune in and leave inspired to bring your life-saving products to the world.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into From Lab to Launch. Today, we're glad you're here. I'm Kelly from Qualio, and I'm your host. We hope you enjoy the conversations on the show as much as we do. We'd love a quick review of the show on Apple or Spotify. It takes just a minute and it helps get the message out there. And if you want to be on the show, fill out the application linked in the show notes. We've had a lot of people reach out and it's been a pleasure connecting with you. Today, we have Ethan Drower, who's joining us from Argentina. He is the co-founder and operating partner of SiteMed, which is revolutionizing the European Union Medical Device Regulation Process, or EUMDR. With some major updates to the EUMDR in the past couple of years, the need for innovation and efficiency there has never been greater. Ethan and the team at SiteMed are making a streamlined process for a med device company's clinical evaluation report documentation, which some medical writers spend hours and hours, well, spend entire careers on, frankly. He'll explain more about their literature search and the review process later on. SiteMed's top goal is to help companies get their medical products to market as quickly as possible, all while maintaining state-of-the-art compliance with the European Commission regulations, which is actually very aligned with what we do here at Qualio as well. So we're going to have fun nerding out on all this stuff today. They have several EUMDR templates and content on their website, which we'll link to in the show notes. If EUMDR is on your mind, you'll get a lot from what Ethan and the team at SiteMed are doing. All right, let's get to it. Welcome, Ethan. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Kelly. Real excited for this one.
Awesome. We love hearing how companies launched. Tell us the story behind launching SiteMed.
Well, we saw an opportunity years ago when EUMDR, the draft, was first launched. And my background has always been in software. I have not been in the medical device space for very long. And my co-founder has been in the space for a very, very long time, probably 30, 40 years. And when he saw the regulation, one of the companies he was consulting for and working with and helping, he realized that there was just no way. They weren't going to, they had hundreds of products. They had a quality team, regulatory team of two or three people. And he knew that there was no way they were going to get this work done because the clinical evaluation standard specifically just ballooned. It's exponentially harder to get this work done for MDR. So he saw the opportunity. He came to me and he said, I don't know much about software, but is there something we can do? Is there a tool we can build to make this process more efficient for us? Because we're dying here and we're not going to be able to get the work done. So that was kind of the light bulb moment for me, you know, the intersection of this is coming, this is a big market change, and here's an opportunity to use technology to solve a problem that's going to impact, you know, millions of people and thousands of companies. So we kind of got into it and, you know, signed a first client, scrambled to build some products and get some stuff done. And, you know, the rest is history. We've been humming along ever since.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty scary, you know, having been in industry a long time myself here in the US, the biggest change, of course, the companies that had been doing, you know, CERs already had the infrastructure in place. But when they expanded the definitions of devices and said, no, all these other things are now a device and you must do clinical evaluation reports. Yeah, there's a whole lot of little bitty, you know, one and two person companies with one device in the market going, oh my God, how am I going to do this? So that's an amazing opportunity story that you share there. And definitely one we feel here across the entire device market for sure. So walk us through the literature driven exactly. Regulatory process that your team has architected.
So what we do two different things. We do it for you, or we give you the tools to do it yourself, right? So the process that we've built, it is essentially just a software tool that helps you compile all of these massive amounts of clinical literature that you have that are relevant to your devices, and then go through them in a systematic way and apply, you know, your whatever type of rankings or criteria you want to them, right? We need to evaluate all of the literature in a documentable and recordable way. in a way that can be reproduced, most importantly. And then we need to click a button and we need to spit out a report that actually makes sense to an auditor and gets them the information that they want to see in a way that's digestible. You know, these reports can get into the hundreds of pages, right? I'm sure you guys have seen these documents really balloon. And it's critical that you have an organized approach, and every time you do it the same way. Because if you have an auditor that's going to read through multiple of these submissions of multiple products, you don't want to be surprising them and confusing them every time because you had a contractor do it and the formatting is different. The tables are all in a different order with different columns. None of that. So what we do is we've built a process. We use software to assist the writer in the process and handle all of the monotonous heavy lifting of formatting, tables, blah, blah, blah. And then what we did after we built this tool for our writers and our team is we turned around and we made it available to some of our clients. And they can use it themselves, or they can have us drive the whole process for them. So it really depends on where you're at with your team, how many people you have, how far behind you are. You know,
that's always the kicker. How far behind are we?
That's almost always my first question, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, I think that's part of the standard response in the timelines is yeah, how far behind are you on keeping up with it all?
Yes.
Well, and so that's
how bad is it?
How bad is it? Exactly. Well, and that's, you know, that's the nice segue to the next question. You know, so why is having a systematic literature review process important for a medical device company CERs?
Sure. Well, we find that for most products, a lot of these companies are not doing their own studies. They're not doing their own post-market clinical follow-up. A lot of the devices are of a simpler nature, and they just don't have a lot of data. They don't have their own clinical data. It's expensive. You're not going to do studies for, you know, your gloves, right? Yeah, your surgical gloves or something like that. Nobody's paying for that. So we found that, especially, you know, with our experience with the notified bodies and with MDR, that if you can present an incredibly comprehensive approach to how you've searched for and sought out clinical literature that's related to your device. If you can do that, then it makes your whole CER submission just go a little bit smoother because you've established a foundation of clinical knowledge. And if your NB auditor buys that and says, okay, these guys have done their research, they've done their homework, and this is what they've found, almost always they are okay with that approach. So we try to use this literature review to kind of drive the document. And we use it as a core pillar of what we reference in a CER. Furthermore, we take that and we take that same process and we apply it to a proposed part of our proposed post-market clinical follow-up plan and process. And obviously the periodic safety update report if required. So we take this core literature review process. We say, this is what we do. And we do this all the time. We do it every year or every 2 years, depending. And we use that as the pillar to drive, to flow into these other documents as needed. It doesn't cover everything, of course, but we find that the solid process really the notified bodies seem to understand it, and it seems to be what they're looking for. They're looking for a reproducible, well-documented methodology that you can actually stick to and maintain.
Yeah, the maintenance of it too. And, you know, to that end, you know, they are living documents. You know, it's not a one and done kind of situation. So I assume your software tool, you know, once you've sort of built that search criteria, then, you know, it becomes a lot easier to just rerun it and keep adding information as it comes to mind, right?
Exactly. Probably much like how your system works, right? You want an audit trail. You want a storable list of the work that you've done previously. And then when you want to add new stuff, you want that to be, you know, at least some at least accounted for. So that's part of the big reason for trying to use software for this is you want to keep track of your exact search protocol that you ran before so that you can show your periodic updates quarterly, annually, whatever interval you want. And you don't have to think about it each time and redig up the document and do the searches by hand. And it just becomes a nightmare. How could you do that on 50 products every year? There's no time.
Yeah, definitely. That's and a wide variety, you know, especially, I mean, if you've got 50 products, you're probably in a similar space, but yeah, the tiny details of the differences there can certainly make or break your whole approach to that process. You're in the med device regulatory space for the long
absolutely.
Haul. You know, how do you see things changing over the next decade?
We are, and we couldn't be more excited about it. I think, especially in the regulatory space, there is a lot of work to be done when it comes to improving quality systems and regulatory processes. Obviously, you guys know that too, because you're at the forefront of getting these companies off of paper QMS and complaint management and all of those things. So you know as well as anybody else how hard it can be to be a technological innovator in this space right now, because there's the old guard, and now the regulations are forcing companies to be more efficient or they're going to struggle. Right. So we're excited to see more use and more acceptance of technology. I'm hoping for a grander vision where clinical literature and especially things like adverse events and complaints can be stored in a much more centralized and accessible network for every. I think that there, especially for big manufacturers that get a lot of complaint data, I think that there are endless opportunities to use different kind of machine learning technologies to help identify risk profiles in devices. You know, we're a very reactive industry right now, and there are ways. Technology is not going to do it all for us. There's still judgment calls to be made. There's still a lot that needs to be done. But I think that especially machine learning can help us help at least raise red flags when they're needed, and can help quality assurance and regulatory affairs professionals kind of navigate the waters a little bit more effectively and feel a little bit more in control, as opposed to at the end of every 2 years, we get the report and we say, oh, that could be a problem, right? So I'm hoping to see the trend of use and leverage of technology and software really, really start to get adopted. And I'm sure you share that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, we used to, once upon a time, I ran a complaint team and trolling the MAUDE database for the FDA. You know, you never want the FDA to come to you and say, well, we see this trend in your reporting data, right? You know, because if they see it and you haven't already fixed it, you know, then yeah, obviously that's a huge, you're
it's
behind the curve. Definitely. And it's interesting that you bring up the whole machine learning and that sort of thing, because it's a topic we talk about internally here all the time. Where are places that we can leverage machine learning or predictive, you know, sorts of data analysis within the quality space? And, you know, and just, I remember when we used to record data on carbon copy lab papers that were numbered. So that tells you how long I've been around in the industry. Now that we're doing all of this electronically, it's like, wow, what sorts of things could I learn from that data? And the post-market surveillance space and the clinical evaluation reporting, that's definitely, I think that's probably the most powerful place, I think, to apply the kinds of technology that you guys are doing. Because even if you had clinical data, I mean, did you have 250 people in your trial? Did you have 1,000 people in your trial? You know, now that you're on the market, that's, you know, as much as anybody might not like to think about, we're all just part of a big clinical trial, right? Once somebody, even if it's approved, there's still so much more to learn about the product in the field. And now that we also don't have to do it through, you know, gobs of magazines and all of that old school sort of stuff, you know, with the group and the team and the clinical group whose, you know, job was to read magazines all the time for exactly the kinds of things that your software is doing. So that's really powerful. That's really exciting. If you could go back and tell yourself something at the start of your career, what would that be?
I would say the biggest challenge that I faced in my earlier years was getting too excited about too many new ideas and spaces. Every year, there's a new shiny thing that you can build and try and fix and go after and change the world. But what I've learned in my older years is that if you really want to make a big impact and create lasting change in anything you do, choose wisely the vehicle, choose wisely the industry and the product that you're trying to build, and you need to stick with it. It's going to take years to build a good brand. It's going to take years to build a product that actually is useful. It's going to take years to build these relationships with customers and other companies in your space that can yield those big lucky moments. And if I could tell myself anything, you know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I would say, pick something, stick with it, kid. Pick something you love doing and stick with it. Don't chase a new thing, a new project every 6 months. You'll never get there.
Well, and that's, I think that's powerful too. As you said, when you started off, you know, you're not from life sciences, you're a software guy. And I don't think people necessarily understand or recognize, you know, life sciences, obviously as an industry, that there's so much to it. There's so much opportunity in lots of different ways. You know, you've taken your software expertise, you can go, partnered with an industry expert to solve a very large problem we have in this industry. And I'm sure you probably didn't get your computer science degree thinking you were going into medical devices, right? Like that's, so
not that, quite.
That's an interesting sort of progression, but I feel like that's really, that's a powerful story. That's really encouraging to share with people because, you know, like here at Qualia, we really believe in, you know, helping companies launch life-saving products, and we're all here for that. But I was talking with somebody internally who's, you know, our internal people communications manager. Right? He didn't go to college thinking he was going to go work in the pharmaceutical industry, right? But here he is supporting an industry that really touches lives. And so that's, I love that. That's a great story, and certainly something to think about for folks doing computer stuff. You know, you can come change the world too in ways maybe you didn't think of when you were studying in college.
There are a lot of paths that are not the flavor of the day technologies. And I think that as engineers, it's kind of our responsibility to try to find our home, find the way that we can put these skills to use to have the biggest impact. And for me, it just, everything lined up, and you know, the life sciences world just became a no-brainer for me. And it felt right. You know, it aligned with my values and the values of the type of company I wanted to build. And, you know, as a year in, we all kind of looked at each other and said, we're doing this. This is it. This is the venture. This is going to take us, you know, 15, 20 years to really get to where we wanted to go, to have the biggest impact. And yeah. So couldn't be more excited to be here.
Awesome. To wrap it up, people learn more, follow along and connect with you.
They can always find me on LinkedIn. I'm very chatty on there. So you can search me, Ethan Drower, on LinkedIn. I'm the only one, which is nice. Or you guys can, yeah, there are no other Ethan Drowers out there. You can check out our website, which is site, CITE, like citation, and medical.com. But that's it. You can find us pretty easily.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your time today, Ethan. It's been great chatting with you. And I've definitely bookmarked your website. I have several friends in industry. I'll be sending that information along too, because that is definitely a service we need in this industry big time. So thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Kelly. I appreciate it. This is great.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of From Lab to Launch, brought to you by Qualia. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and give the show a positive review. It really helps us out. For more information about Qualio, our guest today, or to be a guest on a future episode, please refer to the show notes. Until next time.